Welcome to What's Left, a weekly political discussion challenging the mainstream left. I'm Eduardo Barca with co-hosts, teacher and socialist Andy Lipson, and community organizer and socialist Kenny Cepeda. We are online at what-s-left.webnode.com. Today we will be discussing the events that happened in Kenosha. On Sunday, the 23rd of August, Jacob Blake was tased and shot seven times point blank in the back by police officer Rustin Esky. His three children witnessed the entire thing. The incident happened in Kenosha, Wisconsin. After he was shot, the police called for medical assistance. He was airlifted by helicopter, and he did later, as the news came out, survive and was expected to be paralyzed from the waist down. Within hours of the news of this, there were mass gatherings of demonstrations and protests that took over the streets of Kenosha. There were also armed citizens in Kenosha, and one of those armed citizens happened to be 17-year-old Kyle Rittenhouse, who is from Illinois, and he shot two people who are now pronounced dead. And there were mixed messages as to what prompted Kyle Rittenhouse to start shooting. And after the shooting of Jacob Blake, alongside Kyle Rittenhouse, Kenosha received national and international attention. And that's as well, just only got heightened with the Milwaukee Bucks, who were scheduled to play a playoff game, but instead came out and decided that they would hold off their game. Anything else that you two would like to add to that? If I missed something.
There were other athletes or teams, WNBA, the MSL, the soccer league, hockey league, and baseball players all did various forms of work actions, actually, in response to it. And there were three people shot, two people killed by Kyle Rittenhouse. I think those are most. And then, of course, the response of both Trump and the governor of Wisconsin and the mayor of Kenosha.
Yeah. And
to basically call in, the authorities.
Yes. This is an ongoing conversation, I think, that we will have around people being scuffled, shot at, tased, brutalized by the police. And this time, Jake Blake is one of those surviving people that have been shot by police. So I think that maybe we can go into whoever's first thoughts on it.
Well, my first thought is here we are again. Massive protests, the National Guard. We are now seeing basically what I think is mercenaries doing the dirty job of the state. That to me is not new. If anyone goes back to our episodes on Nicaragua, that is classic of a state that, encourages their mercenaries to do work on their behalf when they're kind of overpowered at times, or just, maybe even lose some legitimacy. And that's where I see Rittenhouse representing. This young kid that came out from another state to come and protect private property, the job of the cops, in this system. I have more questions, that I think at some point I want to ask Lipson, because, he's had more experience here, I'm just curious if you've ever seen a period like this, in the recent history where things are escalating and getting more polarized. And, I just came back from vacation today, actually. I've been away from all this and started preparing for the show today and started seeing arguments on both sides, conservative, liberal arguments. And I just see an escalation of this, like polarization and, basically it gives me a little bit of anxiety. you know, because, you know, here we have two candidates on the left that people think are going to be the saviors, but they represent that, you know, police and the apparatus of the state. Even Kamala Harris, like her statement was about trusting government, you know, in law and order, basically. And yeah, just so that's just my first thoughts, I guess.
Can I just add, there, you're talking about mercenaries helping the state. This has been an issue where we've had, we've seen in protests over the summer where armed civilians, some of them officially calling themselves militias or some of them calling themselves by other names, whether it be Boogaloo or they're out there either inciting or trying to create this law and order that is being talked about in the rhetoric of the politicians, and they're out here trying to preserve this order and protect so-called right the supposedly businesses and to protect people's safety, and the police has denied it, but there was footage of the police department in a video where I'll just read it from here, where they weren't being cleared from the area. A lot of people have seen that there was a video where sheriff deputies from Kenosha were giving water to some of these armed militia members, and in fact saying, "We really appreciate your help." Mm-hmm. And that's just that was just I just saw that, and so I just wanted to add on to what Kenny was saying about people out on the streets as well supporting the state.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm going to do a screen share again and show you what I think the story. The story is here, or obviously I think I will start with and agree with the Kenny that here we are again. George Floyd was murdered. Defund the police, the sham of that, the sham of somebody who was going to the sham that politicians were going to do anything about these police. We had said before that with the separation of wealth between the wealth, you know, with wealth going upward, and I'm going to say something about statistics on that, that was only going to mean more police violence, not less. We're going to see a continuation of that. The Democrats know that they're going to be counting on the same police force. And in fact, Biden is accusing Trump of underfunding the police and saying he will do a better job making sure the police have the money that they need and, you know, that they're paid. It's couched partially in terms of training, but he's saying, I'm going to put plenty of money in for the police. So I will start with that. But I actually think I'm going to do another screen share again, if you wouldn't mind. And this, to me, is the story here. Do y'all see that?
Yeah, I can see it.
This is the S&P index, and as you can see, it's at its highest part. It's at its highest part, and this is true with Wall Street and the Dow Jones. It's at its highest part. It's completely recovered, right? No COVID problems for Wall Street. And the story here is that much of that growth is in Alphabet, Amazon, Microsoft, Apple. Actually, there's about 400 of the 500 companies on this index. Most of that growth is due to those companies. That the other 495 actually had a slight decrease. Okay, so it's what we've been saying, I think what we've been saying is, wealth is going massively upward and it's getting concentrated into the big hands. If there was a problem with the police, that would not be happening. S&P, Wall Street would not be shooting out of the roof if there was real worry about the police not having control of this situation. Or if there wasn't concern if they were concerned that society was polarizing. Because while I think that the language is polarizing around this, we actually have two political parties. If you looked at the RNC and the DNC, you really couldn't see too much of a difference between their political positions. There wasn't much of a difference there. The difference is in the rhetoric. The difference is in the talk of, you know, we're going to be defending the police and we're defending Black Lives Matter, and all of them are lying. They are both parties of defending S&P Index and the Wall Street Journal. I mean, and Wall Street, and they're doing a fabulous job of it, and they know that their police are completely capable of doing that. Now, this Kyle Rittenhouse guy is part of a group that just only only a month ago or 2 months ago, these kind of groups were showing up at state offices at Democratic governors and saying, unlock the city, let us free. They were complaining about, and you're not going to take our guns from us. And as if the state was the problem at that point. Now they're coming back and seeing, so it just shows that, and now they're coming back and saying, oh no, the problems are these protesters. The problems are people destroying property, right? And it's clear to me that both sides, the Republican Party has mobilized their base around this cause. The Democrats have mobilized their base, and it's a complete scam on both ends. I do think they've been able to polarize the language, but there's not a polarization of politics here. The politics are completely captured by the capitalist class from both ends. And that's the story here. And do people want to respond to that, or should I say one more thing?
I mean, I do think that, I agree with you that at the top, it's just rhetoric, What I'm concerned about is the people fighting for crumbs, that seemingly opposite ends, where in reality we should be fighting the people at the top. That's what I'm concerned about, no doubt, like the ruling class, they're basically the same. They're talking about law and order with different words. And they're going to bring the weight of the state on people. So again, I'm just concerned about us fighting for crumbs, fighting each other rather than fighting them. And so I think in that is like, we're all getting fooled. And it's concerning because I don't see an exit to that rather than keep fighting. And, and at that point, like, do we keep taking shit or do we respond? Do we defend ourselves? Even though that's wrong, but that's what gives me anxiety. Because I'm not going to sit around and wait for someone to get their shit together. I completely get it. I know they need to understand that differently too. I mean, we all need to at the bottom, but that's what the polarization that I'm concerned about. And it serves their game for sure.
Yeah. What should I say? Yes, we are fighting each other. But the workers who are lining up behind the Republican Party and the workers who are lining up behind the Democratic Party are playing a game of taste great, less filling. Like, we're not fighting each other even over anything that actually represents a political difference, because we're both, unfortunately, both sides are captured by two capitalist parties which largely are in agreement. So for that reason, I feel like the split is being exaggerated. It's being exaggerated by the Democratic Party and the Republican Party in the context of this election. And this election is going to be a Wild West show. I can see that, because there's going to be the results that come in from the ballots immediately, and then there's going to be the results that come in from the counting of ballots later. And so that to me, not that things will settle down, but for me, all this energy looks to be now outside of the energy of the disgust around the racism and the police violence. That's legit. But unfortunately, and I haven't talked about the baseball players and basketball players yet, and I think there's something to be said about that. And I also want to talk about my union and what the situation we as workers face, because we're kind of in a difficult situation here. And I've been thinking about how could we play a role in this, and it's very difficult right now. So in many ways, the only working class response that has come to this has been from professional athletes. They're the only one who've mobilized an organized working class response to this. And it was important, but largely symbolic, with no demand, with no, like, we are not going to play until this happens. Like, we're not going back until this happens. It was, and there was Obama talking to, what's his name? Who's a really good basketball player?
LeBron
James, yeah. They had their conversation, I think Chris Paul, and they were talking about, let's get back to playing, let's build a social justice, whatever. So there's a element of co-optation, but that element, first of all, that's not the organized working class, and their strike action was only going to be able to be symbolic. But if we were going to see something here, it was going to have to come from teachers, hospital workers, grocery store workers, transportation workers, auto workers, meatpacking. Like, that is that is where this was response was going to have to come out of. And I can only say that I honestly don't know, like, I can say this thing of like, well, we teachers should strike, but we're stuck on Zoom, independent. What do I do? Log off? Is that what I do? Is that what a strike means now? I log off and I try to like send an email to the rest of my colleagues to log off as well? Like, how do we build that strike? In a sense, what I'm kind of struck with right now is many of us, particularly us teachers, I'll just say us teachers, we've by asking to go to this distance learning, we have also completely disempowered ourselves. We are no longer at our sort centers of power from which we could have even had a response to this that might have garnered a response or might have given the ruling class something to think about. So like we can't strike right now. Like it doesn't mean anything. It just means me logging off and a bunch of us logging off. And then they just get somebody else to log on. They take off our logins and our passwords and they give them to somebody else. And then they go and then they put the kids back to school. Or at the very least, let's even say they don't do that. Let's say they don't get electronic scabs. It just means me logging off. There's no effect. There's no way workers now that we've given up our centers of power, at least as teachers, we can't act on this. Yeah. And even I can't even complain about the fact that we're not doing anything. Because right now, I'm not even sure what we would do to make an impact. Because we've basically been sent to our houses. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess if you just clarify for everyone, what is a center of power that you're talking about? If you were in school, what would that look like?
It would be like us at Mission High School, basically occupying Mission High School, saying we're not working, and then from there, spreading the strike and trying to get other people to join us in this strike. Now, the problem is, well, what's the demand of the strike? Defund the police? That clearly is not enough. The only demand that can make any sense is disband the police and rebuild it under workers' power. That's the only thing. But again, it's revolution or nothing. There's no middle ground anymore.
And I think that's the thing that I was thinking a lot about. So I was in Lake Tahoe, you know, like kind of the country, a lot of American flags, you know, at least on the surface, this peaceful, you know, environment. I'm sure there's a lot of people struggling. You know, there's also a lot of people doing okay. And, you know, from a distance, this seems like a foreign issue, like some of these issues happening in the city. So the question I was like, I'm wrestling with is, why do I tell these people? What do they stand to gain from this? You know, what if, you know, the madness that looks to be happening in the cities, because this is what the Republicans are riding on, you know, conservative news, whatever. What do we have to offer them, you know, that it's better, that, you know, that it benefits them too?
Well, Eduardo, you haven't spoken, so you want to say something there?
Well, I think, you know, this is an interesting conversation because when we discussed talking about this, I had a different way of going about this topic. Where we are heading with this in this direction is thought-provoking, and it allows me to explore personally, like, what is the working class response to this shooting of Jacob Blake, to what do we make of a 17-year-old Rittenhouse, right? And so I guess right now I'm shifting gears along with you all in this improvised conversation. Maybe it wasn't improvised for you, Andy, but in my head, it's sort of improvised. So I guess I'm right now exploring what it would look like in response during the pandemic, during COVID, because I don't think it's just the unions that are disempowered, that don't have any leverage, any form of, I think there are a lot of people right now at home. I have tenants that are at home right now all day. They don't even, their restaurants are not open. There are people who I know are still struggling. They're in the gig economy here and there. So right now, Uber and Lyft are teaming up together to not call the employees, which they are, they're workers. So they just got. So I can see how. So I guess I'm just trying to figure out what are my, where do I see solidarity happening with the protests that happened in Kenosha as we're discussing. So I'll let you both continue and I'll share some thoughts because I do think it's important that we don't just cover this. I had actually asked you, Andy, if we can cover it from this. I didn't think we were going to go like this, but from the perspective of trying to speak out on this, as also the Democrats are going to co-opt this movement to try to say, this is what you should do. This is the reason why you should vote. I'll leave it at that for the moment.
I mean, to be honest, Eduardo, this was a confusing issue for me. I mean, this is why I was glad to talk about it, because in some ways it's because we're all trapped in our little bins with these computers. Yeah. Everything's remote. Like literally things are remote and they aren't remote. What happened to Jacob Blake and what Kyle Rittenhouse is doing is connected to us, but it's harder to feel that way. And I think the question of solidarity was, I have to ask, like, what solidarity do we as teachers in San Francisco have to offer? And I usually say, look, since we're not prepared to strike, we have no solidarity to give you because we're not willing to defend ourselves. But now I want to go farther and say we're in a worse situation than that. Is that even if we decided to strike, we don't have a way of spreading the strike. We have no way of actually threatening the capitalists in any meaningful way, which is why the S&P and everything is so high. Like COVID and all the things that happened in the economy and all that has been a disaster for workers. And it's been a disaster for small businesses. In San Francisco, supposedly the Chamber of Commerce said 1,300 of the 2,500 businesses are shut down permanently or gone in San Francisco, which seemed like a small number of small businesses, but that's what they said. Chamber of Commerce said that. So, and then at the same time, I see this thing about, what is it? The world's 25 richest individuals have increased their total wealth by $255 billion in the space of 2 months. And this was written by Forbes in May. So things have only gotten better in Wall Street since May. So that was in May, So what do you do about wealth going so high up? Who can stop that? And this gets to your question, Kenny. The only source of stopping that is the organized working class, but it's the organized armed working class ultimately. Like, and this is why we mentioned the Not Fucking Around Coalition, right? Those black armed guys who are out there. That's in the right direction, but armed to defend what? That's what the question. And workers would need to be armed to defend their control of their workplaces. When we have been sent out of our workplaces, we no longer have places to defend. We have to go back to them to defend them and reclaim them and then put them under our ownership. And that's why workers ultimately need to be armed. And then that would threaten capitalist wealth. But we're so far from, we're not even, like, I'm not even talking about what's in our heads. We are now physically atomized. If you know what I'm saying, like, it's a very bad situation. And so I get why the capitalist class is so excited and so confident. That's what this S&P and Dow Jones Industrial Average indicate. It indicates the immense confidence that the ruling class has in this country, that they have got a lock on things. They're not worried about Rittenhouse or Jacob Blake or the demonstrations. They're not worried about them. All they're going to try to do is figure out how they're going to use it to get one of their, whether they're going to get Biden in or Trump in. And there's a dude who was interviewed. He's like a $5 billion person. And he was like, I'm not sure who I'm going to vote for yet. Trump seems to have good economic ideas, but Biden seems like to be a good guy. Does that sound like a worried rich dude? Doesn't sound very worried to me. He's not worried about people like Kyle Rittenhouse or the people who are trying to stop these racist attacks on African-Americans, Latinos, whatever, there's going to be stuff. They're not worried about that because they know it's controlled right now. And honestly, the only response was from the professional athletes. And they're not going to make this happen. And that was only symbolic. And I think what they did was important, but it had literally nothing underneath it. We would have had to follow with teacher strikes and nurses strikes and grocery store workers saying, fuck you, we're not going to work anymore. We're not doing this. We're taking control of this thing. That's the only way this is now going to get reorganized. Because and where that wealth distribution is going to have, like the kind of wealth distribution that the looting is only a little piece of, right? The looting is partially wealth redistribution downward back a little bit. But that's not the scale we're talking about. We're talking about taking all the capital back. And if we're not talking about that, then they're getting over on us.
And I think that's where the failure is, because, you know, the current rhetoric, current political aspirations of the left are not inclusive of those anxieties of the right wing, you know, those with weapons. That's what gives me anxiety, that we are far from that, from talking about an inclusionary movement, right? That's talking about war against the ruling class, you know, the capitalist class. But at the same time, you know, like this, what's happening now, like gives me anxiety around the issue of no doubt that, you know, the workers will have to be armed to protect their protests, to protect their strikes, because the reality is that not the entire working class is going to fall in line, you know, or go behind this movement. There is a set of, we will have to draw a line on the yeah. sand at some point. You know, there's some people that are going to be against our interests. And so we will have to be ready to respond to that violence, because they will be mercenaries of the state. This is just a micro example.
Yeah.
You know, because once the police force or the military or they seem overpowered, they're going to need help. And that's where I think they're going to, you know, dig into this. It seems on the surface that it's just the right wing, but I'm not so sure. You know, at least that's how the, you know, liberal media paints it. But yeah, I mean, I think that currently we're not very inclusive, because we're not talking about a working class movement that's inclusionary. It's about race, and so it fits the anxieties. Even though we've talked before, you know, why, you know, Black lives matter to the ruling class, and that's why they oppress them so much. So that's my concern, that we're far. I agree with you, Lipson, that, you know, I just see us more apart, you know, from even organizing anything or even having a conversation about these things. And we are completely now, like, if you were talking about, you know, Eduardo, like Russian bots and stuff, we're completely at the mercy of the news even more now than before. You know, the official storylines. We're not even allowed to have, you know, little conspiracy conversations, like, you know, in private.
What I struggle with is trying to talk about how we can hold space for two truths. There is racism in this country. There is police brutality that overwhelmingly does affect the Black community. And I think of the police brutality, if we just take race out of the equation, the police brutality that exists from the state that people could relate to, if it wasn't about race, would make maybe more solidarity protests. Does that make sense, what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Because I was looking at Kenosha's long history of problems between the police and their citizens. And this is going to be hard because I don't want to like undermine that Jacob Blake was a Black man that was shot by the police, and racism is a factor in a lot of police brutality. But I do feel like when I was looking into Kenosha's history, there were parts of it that I think that a lot of people could relate to, the working class could relate to this, if they saw how this is personal to them as well as citizens, because unlike in other areas like Baltimore, Minneapolis, like this city has had plenty of problems of their citizens with the police. If I can just look at one incident that was also not of many, where the Kenosha police shot a young man named Michael Bell point blank in the head. Michael Bell was white, and there wasn't even enough time to do an investigation because there was the police department. They almost there was justification in the shooting, and again, similar issues of sort of victim blaming the other instead of taking accountability as the police. And there were other incidents like that as well that I looked up. And if these violent demonstrations, as they're being called, right? That's not, I want to say just what the media is calling them, could only be tapped into for the uprising that is necessary for the unity that needs to exist, for solidarity to happen. I would imagine that we could fortify more people to really get this to a more relatable perspective, if that makes any sense. But unfortunately, I don't know how. I think most people see it as like, that's happening there, that's a black issue, it doesn't happen. I don't know if that is what is not allowing people to take this into like really connecting with the shootings, and possibly the reason why there is lack of solidarity is what I'm exploring.
Yeah, but that's why you can't separate it from racism, because it is racist to not be completely disgusted by someone being shot 7 times and paralyzed and then being handcuffed to his bed during the time after the police shot him. Like, clowns like Rittenhouse or other people who, like I said, 2 months ago said, oh, we're standing up to the state, and now these fools are doing the state's bidding. Idiots. You're suckers. You're like, and you've fallen for it, and now you're going right in for the divide. And yeah, you're racist. And yeah, you're hurting our cause, you know? And the capitalists are to blame, but white workers like Rittenhouse are just dupes. And if our movement was more organized, was armed, he's going to have to decide which side he's going to get on. And the movement has to be able to rally around people like Jacob Blake. Because if it can't, it's no good. If it needs somebody else to rally around, then this movement is a failure. Because this movement has to take on racism. And it has to go straight at it. It has to take on the people who are like, okay, oh, that person did a crime in prison. Well, yeah, there is a person did a crime in prison. I want them out, and I want those jails liberated. Yes. That's what a movement of liberation will have to be about. And it's not about finding the right cause. It's about workers understanding that we as a class are under attack, and it's our black brothers and sisters who need the defense the most. That's the basis of an injury to one is an injury to all. That is the basis of that. That is an anti-racist understanding of the world. And that injury to one is Jacob Blake.
But I think also like a little bit, maybe if I understand what you were saying, Eduardo, that I think that's a limiting factor of the arguments of, you know, on the left right now, is that yes, Jacob Blake, George Floyd, but what about all those people have been brutalizing all those protests? We're not even talking about that. I feel like we've been tokenizing black people, you know, in every death that comes, you know, at their hand. And there's a lot of people, there's people dying in fucking protests. Those are our people too. You know, they're working class people fighting for change, and we're not outraged for that. So we're just here basically tokenizing people.
If I may, this is again very delicate territory for me to enter, and that's why I'm trying, if you both just cut this little parenthesis, you know that when I feel like I'm going to say something controversial, I take my time, so please forgive me, I apologize for me trying to find the right words to express this. If I understand what you're, that's what I think I'm trying sort of to say, Kenny, that I was just having a conversation with some housemates who are Latino, and they we were talking in Spanish, and they were saying how, because I brought up how Black people are shot at, and they almost, I guess somehow I was just observing that the conversations around Black people being shot is sort of disconnected. Somehow there isn't a connection to it. And then when I brought it about, like, you know, when I just simply said, like, police brutality that happens in our countries in Latin America, where there's lots of police violence that happens, then it was a conversation about the police and not about Black people. But they thought, yes, there is actually, yes. And in this country too, there was somehow this connection happened with them when I talked about police violence, police brutality in general. And then I was able to then hold the conversation about, and that is this problem's country with Black people. It almost like being able to connect them first about police violence and then being able to talk about Black people, because somehow the conversations about race first was separate or distinguished for them, that's not my problem or not, that's not my issue. And that's what I think I was present to as I was talking earlier about how I think the solidarity that happens is if we all really understand that this is something that's happening to us as a whole, because police violence is an arm of the state, and we, including Black people, are working class folk together. Like, all of us, we're all in this together. I guess I'm trying to hold that, like I said, two truths together, where namely, Black people in this are mostly targeted because of racism, and that we are also, I don't know how to say this, almost the identity politics issue almost doesn't allow people to move past the separation of understanding that we're really all connected.
Yeah.
I'm trying to understand it and sort it out. Apologize for my...
I hear that, like, in my circles, like, again, racism is ahead of, like, capitalism. They see capitalism as a second, third issue.
Yeah.
Without understanding that it's a central part in that, you know, again, racism, we've said in previous shows, is a tool of capitalism. You know, if we don't understand it that way, then we're going to keep failing. You know, we're asking for charity. We're begging for change. You know, we're begging to defund police when their literal job is to prevent change, you know, to defend the status quo. And we were talking about, you know, changing rules, you know, as if we have some say on the rules. So that's what we talk about, you know, in other shows about how this has to change in the struggle, you know, in the struggle as a working class. And I just feel anxiety around that, because you said earlier, Lipson, you know, all the things, the ways we're being atomized, and you know, put into little bins, like you said, little boxes. It's just a bit concerning for me. I, at the moment, I'm more concerned about that line, like when we're gonna have to draw that line. I don't know, just thoughts.
Well, I think, Eduardo, I appreciate you bringing this up, because I do think, that is what I was thinking when you were talking about your friend's discussion, is I do believe that that kind of thinking is kind of the fruit of identity politics. It's like, well, that's not me. That's not my cause, you know, that's kind of their cause. And that doesn't seem connected to me right now. Now, and we both, Kenny and I, and even you at times have said, look, this is a class issue. But honestly, when I think about this, my first starting point is to talk about the racism, because racism is embedded in our class divisions. And I do believe that this wouldn't have happened to him, and he would not be treated this way, and people wouldn't have these questions in their heads. You wouldn't have these white kooks coming and doing police's job when the police are plenty fine. Police have got this shit under control. There's not a problem for the police and National Guard. This is just, I mean, they're just being electoral tools. And I get it that after Kyle Rittenhouse shoots these people, he runs by and does high fives with the police as he's going through the thing. I mean, that is roughly the description. And yeah, that's the police. The police are racist. The police are a racist institution because they are a capitalist institution. So of course they have to be racist. But my first starting point for talking about this is the disgusting and deep racism that exists in a society. It's the reason that we're bombing Yemen and Sudan. It's the reason we have our prison population. It's the reason that wealth is divided so horribly. And then within the working class, you see the situation of blacks so much worse than other white workers and even Latino workers, although Latino workers have it bad as well. It's like, that's racism. You know, I mean, we've had with your friend, Eduardo, who was on the episode before, if it wasn't racism, the only way you could explain it is, well, there must be something wrong with those people. They can't make money. They can't, there's a reason they're poor. You know, no, it's racism. It's institutional racism. And this is the impact of it. And it has a present to it and it has a past to it and it will have a future as well. So I actually think as a Marxist, as a person who sees class as the fundamental divide in society, that the first thing that comes out of my mouth when talking about this is the deep racism that it shows in society, exposed not just by the actions of the police, but the fact that there's white people who feel like they need to do the police a favor to like defend them when the police have got it, there's plenty in hand. And that's a problem. That's a problem for the class. And if the class doesn't figure out that we have to rally and defend people like Jacob Blake, and the only way to honestly defend them is to take the system down. And if we can't do it in the name of people like Jacob Blake, we can't do it at all. That's what I'm saying. There's no other poster children. There's no other better causes than these people, because they are the reason that this system has to be taken down.
I guess I'm not looking for another poster person or cause to replace Jacob Blake. But I guess I do feel that there are challenging conversations around this when it's when we, at least for me, I'll just be honest, I don't know what your both experience are, but when I discuss with people, whether that be a friend that is white, we have no, or I discuss this with my brother, or I discuss this with my housemates who are immigrants and don't speak English, or I discuss this with other people, I think people's conditioning that, like, as we were saying, the fruit of identity politics is so ingrained that they just, the disconnection is there. I understand that the principle of discussing it first about race, it just seems like that is not how my discussions, at least that I have had, go anywhere in the discussion it first.
I agree.
And so when I discuss first, when I first discuss, like even discussing with my friend who lives in Florida, discussing first about like his own experience with the police back home, to even discuss like the police, that we could not discuss race. It was about discussing the police and his own experience with the police. Then we were able to talk about something else about race, but it was about his own personal experience. And it was talking about to my brother about his personal experience with the police that it was able to then move forward and past to hold those discussions about race. So I guess I understand your principle, Andy. I just don't know if it's working, at least from my end.
I agree with you. Identity politics is not able to challenge it. It didn't start from identity politics. It comes from ruling ideas of society, which are deeply racist ideas, which we've all been taught and are embedded in the education system, in the political system, in the economic system, in the world we see, in the way we're segregated. So our inability to see our commonality and to see workers as part of a common thing, identity politics has no way of bringing us together. It will keep us divided. But it didn't start the divide. The divide started with capitalism and its institutions and its ideologies. So, and I agree with you. I'm not saying I'm having success. I'm saying you can't get around that. Like, and if you want to start with one discussion, lead to the other, maybe. But in the end of the day, if a person's not going to be animated by a disgust over racism, they're going to have to figure something out. I'm not sure what to tell them.
Again, like, that's the lesson I've thought about, you know, that it's not, you know, kumbaya, it's not we all come together. There is going to be people that choose a different path, you know, and, you know, yeah, it's not an easy road. You know, and some people just won't see that, and that's fine. And, you know, we have to organize, and I agree, like, workers are the only class that can, you know, choke capitalism and you know, and build something better. But at the same time, it's not going to be all workers. That's what I think.
I appreciate you acknowledge that, Andy, as well. I think one thing I would like to, if you can say anything about this, Kenny, I think Latinos have a different way about talking about race than here in the USA. It's just my feeling. I mean, it's a different way. Racism does exist. Colorism exists. But definitely a different way of the way that the framework exists.
It's a different experience. I think the U.S. Yeah. Particularly brutal type of racism. You know, the history of racism in the U.S. is just ingrained in ways that, you know, it didn't in other parts of the world. And so therefore we have a different experience and understanding. Not to say that it's not, you know, detrimental to a degree, but and so therefore we have sensitivities here that there don't happen in other countries. And yet we, the educated people in the US, want to export our understanding of race to other countries. We want to implement this shit. And so that now we see movements in other countries that are actually like less likely to come together and overthrow the ruling class, because it's leading to the same problem here that we're seeing, you know, racism as a source of all evil, like not a factor in you know, the capitalist system. And so, yeah, it's kind of concerning, you know, that we're exporting our understanding of racism from here, because I do agree with you, you know, like, growing up, I think we weren't as segregated. Yes, there are communities, of course, because of colonialism and all that. But, you know, even in a lot of our music, you know, you can tell, like, a lot of our music is black and people acknowledge that, you know, and it's kind of combined. I'm not saying that it's so happy-go-lucky and that communities don't get marginalized, but I think that it's not the same experience as the U.S. Of course, if you're indigenous, that's another question, but.
Yeah. I have a question for both of you, if we're going to be wrapping up soon, unless you both have other things to add. But I would like for you both to then, if anyone's listening to this, our audience, what would be the alternative to the ballot box? Because if we don't have ways to organize right now, what then should be the response of the people at this moment? Because people are so separated then.
Honestly, I don't know. I mean, I know what needs to happen. Like, I know we need to strike and spread a strike and have a strike lead to the threat of taking all the wealth from the capitalist class in this country. That's what has to happen. But I do feel like the working class has been dislodged from its center of power for at least from my sector. All right. So I'm out of the game as far as I can tell. Like, what am I supposed to say to my colleagues? Log out? Does that sound scary to you? Like, does that sound like that's going to threaten the capitalists if we all log out and don't log into Zoom tomorrow? Does that have a way of spreading so that capitalist ownership of the means of production feels threatened? Does that connect to restaurant workers or Safeway workers? No, it's disconnected from it. We are disconnected from each other. as teachers and educators. So honestly, until we get back into our centers of power, which is a workplace, I feel like we're out of the game. That's how I feel. Is that, I don't know, is that, that's not much of an answer, but that's my feeling.
That doesn't really, yeah, that's not very hopeful, is it?
Yeah. But my stock answer is we need a socialist revolution. But at this point, I feel dislodged from the place that, from which we would even talk about that taking place.
Yeah. Kenny, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, similar to Lipson, we just keep pushing. And I mean, things are not looking good, you know, but I mean, I think that at least from our point of view, we know what the issue is. We know what needs to happen. How we get there, that's a question that, you know, we have to answer with the tools that we have at hand. And, you know, like, at least for now, for me, at least is, I hope that some people, the best thing that can happen is that people lose faith in this system. You know, in this electoral BS, you know, because it's not going to lead anywhere better for anyone. You know, Lipson shared that disparity of wealth, and that's going to come with real material consequences. And there is no answer in this system. And we're running out of time. So the sooner people lose hope in this and try to find something more radical, that's all I can think of.
And the thing I will say is that the more depressed we get, I feel like the ruling class gets more confident. So the notion that they have a crisis that they're managing, no. Like, their people are not going to lose hope in the electoral. People are going to double down after this election and say, oh, my guy lost, I'm going to get it back next time. That's what's going to happen. So that's what I'm concerned about. Like, this is going to lead again into the wrong conclusions, because there's nothing independent. And the only independent thing that happened was with the basketball, WNBA, what they did. And that was just a brief moment that might have been able to spark a broader response within the class, but we're completely atomized right now.
All right. Well,
good news.
Yeah. is that a good place to? I'm good there.
How do you? I mean, what are your thoughts on those answers? You asked the question. I'd be curious. What do you?
That is, that doesn't sound very moving for, I think, people that are looking for something outside of the ballot box. But I do understand that these are the times that don't allow for much movement. Yeah. If you really want to know what I was thinking, as you were saying, is sort of like, why then continue doing what's left? Why then continue struggling? Why then continue luchando? No, luchando is fighting for or continuing the struggle. And I guess I was just thinking in my head as you were speaking that I can see why student movements, that energy is so there. But those have, as I'll just speak for myself, as I get older, I don't want to be complacent. I want to join something. I wonder back at the time when I was part of a working group in the Occupy movement, how energized and how organized I was then. You know, I was part of the meditators working group social change, and we were so, there was so much liveliness, I suppose, and I don't want to lose that spirit. So what you said isn't very wasn't very
inspiring,
uplifting. But that's all right, because it's your truth and you're right. This is a moment. And as you were saying as well, I was thinking it's COVID has been politicized to make a lot of people feel that way. So I get that, you know, there isn't a lot of way to organize because of COVID being politicized. But another thing that came up, all of these split moments as you were talking, was I don't want to lose focus from the uprisings that are happening in Lebanon right now, in Belarus, and the uprisings here in the USA, that because of Jacob Blake, because of George Floyd, because of Breonna Taylor, and what happened in Portland and in Seattle. Like, I don't want to lose sight that people are out on the streets and working hard. So as you are speaking, I think hold that appreciation for your response, and true, like that's what's going on. And at the same time, I want to acknowledge the hard work that people are trying to take on, that unfortunately are being co-opted by the Democratic Party. That's why I think it's important that we continue what's left, though, for those that who listen in the audience, that don't allow, you know, the light to a moth, don't allow that to confuse you or trap you.
Yeah.
Kenny?
There's people, there's activity for sure.
Yeah.
It has to, you know, and again, if you want something hopeful, the only hope is that those become a working class movement, not a movement based on race alone. And so, you know, there's always possibility, I guess, but, you know, it doesn't seem optimistic at the moment because of those reasons that you just mentioned, the co-opting and the, you know, the lack of independence, even though they seem radical or not. But that's just the hope, you know, and that's why I keep doing this. That's why I keep talking, you know, to people around me. That's why we try to have conversations in some small groups, so that people start asking a different set of questions, and rather than just regurgitating the thing that comes from the, you know, holes of power.
Mm-hmm. I'm good there for myself.
Me too. And Eduardo, I appreciated you bringing this up. And I know that you were like, wait, are we discussing this again? We had discussed about George Floyd. But I think it's important that it comes up again for all the reasons we just discussed. And there's other things as well. But I think when this stuff happens, we do need to come back to it, because we have to remind people this stuff keeps happening.
All right, let's close then, shall we? That does it for this week's episode. What's Left is a weekly political podcast that's channel challenging the mainstream left. We post information about our topics and our guests on the episode notes or wherever you found this episode on our blog at what-s-left.webnode.com. You can find past episodes to this podcast/channel there and connect with us. I remind folks, if you like anything that you have heard here, please share your favorite episode, rate, review, and subscribe to any of our 6 platforms. I remind people, turn on your notifications so that we're able to then reach as many people who are subscribed to our podcast or channel. And you can find us on any of our 6 platforms on Spotify, iTunes, Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, BitChute, or YouTube. If you would like to give us feedback about something you have heard or suggest something for us to cover, contact us through our blog. I'm Eduardo Barca with co-hosts Andy Lipson and Kenny Cepeda. See you all next time.